Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Really got a special guest today. A couple of years ago, Chrissy Mayer got all sorts of headlines for making jokes and getting violent reactions for it. She's been still doing it. She's out on the road. She's working hard. She's a working comedian, but and still defiant to this day. And she joins us today, Chrissy Mayer. So good to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing the podcast today.
Hi, Ed. Thank you for having me. And I'm so glad that you wore the same outfit as you as you're wearing in your poster behind you so that I would know it was you.
This is this is sort of a trademark these days, right? I mean, maybe I should lean over a little bit so it doesn't.
Yeah, I imagine that your office is like, you know, Steve Jobs, and you've just got like 10 copies of that exact outfit lined up.
Well, as we were discussing before, it's really about, I have two sport coats that fit me. There's this one, and there's a slightly bluer one. I chose to go with the trademark today just for you, Chrissy.
Look, you're losing weight. I'm gaining weight. We have opposite problems. I'm just wearing sweatpants because I had a baby. That's my excuse.
I have a baby. You had a baby. You know, I had no excuse for the, roughly 30 years of my adulthood where I was wearing much larger sport coats than this. So yeah, I've kind of
good for you. How did you do it?
Better living through chemicals.
Yes. People are on Ozempic. I didn't know if that was it.
That was it. Ozempic. It was Trulicity, then Ozempic, because I'm type 2 diabetic, right? So
you're who that's made for, not like everybody else just doing it to lose weight.
No, that's true. And you're stuck with it. Once you're on it, you're kind of stuck with it. And I'm waiting to see how long it takes for people to realize that. But yes. So, but when you were pregnant, I think at the time that this Dylan Mulvaney thing blew up, almost exactly two years ago, right? It was in May of 2023.
There was a lot of exciting stuff happening when I was pregnant. Yeah, when I was 8 months pregnant at a comedy show, there was a pepper spraying moment. Like people said, oh, you got pepper spray. It's not like somebody came up to my face and pepper sprayed me. Of course, if that happened, I would have been able to identify them. But what happened was that we think somebody pepper sprayed the bathroom right outside of where I was doing a meet and greet. It was after a comedy show. I'm shaking hands. There were like 20 of us like milling around, hanging out. And all of a sudden I start coughing. I'm like, my eyes are like just tearing, like gushing. And then all of a sudden everybody else starts coughing too. And then they rushed us. My friend, Keanu, who was opening for me at the time, rushed me outside like, you're pregnant. And then we never found out who did it because there weren't any cameras around, but we suspect there was like a guy by himself with a backpack. I'm like, well, that sounds like the type of person. So anyway, that was pretty scary. And the Dylan Mulvaney moment happened before I got pregnant, but that was like right before I got married. So it's been a very fun couple of years. And most recently I got in some trouble because I tweeted a photo. I always like to look in the cockpit of the airplane every time I board a flight, what do the pilots happen to be in terms of gender and color, just for myself. I just take a little peek and go, okay. And then I made a look.
Sure everything lit up. I do the same thing. I always look in there, but I always just, is everything lit up? Okay. I feel right. Good.
Is everything lit up? And I look to see if there's a white man there. And I joke around. Clearly I've had all the flights I've taken have been successful. Clearly I'm here, but I was going to Indiana to do a show just a couple months ago. And I just took a picture of the inside of the cockpit, and there was a black guy in the cockpit seat. And as a joke, I tweeted out, like, I'm on my way to Indiana. If I don't make it, blame DEI. And Ed, this was 6 weeks ago, and I'm still getting hate comments for it. So it's so wild to me how that triggers people. But they act like I invented DEI, which I did not.
No. And in fact, it's actually an issue in transportation these days, and as well as everywhere else. But I mean, this brings us back to what it is that you do. You're a comedian. You're a political satirist. You're also a podcast. We're going to go through all the links and make sure everybody knows where to go. And it will be in the hot air post too, as well. I'll have all the links up for that. But I mean, this is what you're supposed to do. You're a social satirist, as most comedians are, successful ones anyway. you know, Honey Youngman might have been able to get by with just a bunch of one-liners. That was a little bit different age. You know, comedy these days, it's intended to be social satire. And even Henny Youngman was that to some extent. And yet we're living in an age, Chrissy, where people get so angry over the idea that you can make jokes about things. And it's, I mean, certainly it's hit other comedians as well. Michael Rappaport, I think, is probably the most prominent one that I can think of at the moment. But you've been dealing with it for quite a while because you refuse to alter your material to make it, you know, safe.
Yeah, there's something kind of funny with, like, maybe playing with people's triggers. And it's never what you think. It's never the tweets that you think are going to make a huge reaction. And it's just so interesting because I think our news media has done a really good job of training the population to think that words equal violence and words equal personal insults, and that jokes, like if you're joking about a group of people or something not specific, we've now come to the point in time where some people will hear a non-specific joke, they will take it personally as a personal insult, and then they will respond. They think they're responding in equal measure with a targeted, very specific insult to you, the person making the joke. So it's like they've taken something not personal, made it personal, and then they respond back with something personal, and they go, okay, well, this is fair because, but it's just, it's not the way it should be, because we didn't always used to take jokes personally. The jokes just used to be jokes, and everyone was kind of fair game for this. And I don't think comedians should stop doing that. I don't think we should treat one group as a special group that's, you know, free from this kind of, because for me, equality is making fun of every group. You know, we don't just like avoid trans people because, they're mentally ill. And, you know, I think if you want to be equal, then you have to be okay getting made fun of, especially at like a comedy club where people go for this sort of thing.
Right. And by the way, I think your camera might have turned off inadvertently, Chrissy.
Oh, no, it does that when I make a good point. It just shuts down.
You know, people are going to want to see you much more than they're going to want to see me. So I, you know, I just want to make sure that we're giving the audience what they want, Chrissy. But talking about giving the audience what they want, right? People go to comedy clubs not to feel safe. In fact, you know, my wife actually, I used to like to go to comedy clubs. I still like going to comedy clubs. My wife was never a big fan of that because she always felt nervous for the person on stage, right? Because it's not safe. She was always afraid that the person on stage was not going to do well, and she'd start feeling really bad for them.
Wow, that's women for you. Like it's our greatest strength, but also could be our downfall, that we're hyper empathetic. Like your wife is probably hyper empathetic and like feels everybody's pain, feels everybody's emotions, which is like a great thing about being a woman, but sometimes it can bog you down.
Well, yes. And so it's not as pleasant for her to do that because of the risk that the comedians take. And so if you're going to a comedy club, though, you're expecting that, right? You're expecting a comedian to be not safe. The idea is to, you know, be provocative in a humorous way, not necessarily in a mean way, but in a provocative way. And if you're talking about issues that people really know about, anything that's in the news, I mean, I would say that anything that's in the news is really fair game, especially people who put themselves out there in the news, like Dylan Mulvaney, which was a couple of years ago. And you got a huge amount of backlash for that joke or for the series. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had a couple of women. They were very upset. There was another man in the crowd who responded to me because I was just saying, why hasn't Dylan like gone through any major physical surgery to change his parts? And the guy yelled out, because he's a man. And I was like, yeah, because he's a man. And then the women to the other side of the room were like, no, actually, she's a woman. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. I was like, we got one of those. And then I could, you know, when these things happen, you have to feel out the room. Okay, is the crowd on the heckler's side? Is the crowd on my side? Is the crowd on the side of the man? And you're just making all these minor calculations. Figure, am I about to get a shoe thrown at me? Like, just like, you know, Bush style. Do I have to like, whoop, you know, dodge a shoe or like a hamburger or something? And I was like, all right, no, this is America. We all have different beliefs. Some of us can believe in reality and some of us can't. And that got some, you know, a good reaction too. Okay, the room is on my side. Let's have fun with these people. And normally people that heckle, I don't want to, like, you know, make an example of them or annihilate them, because they're most of the time just like drunk, or maybe they need a little bit of attention. So anytime there's a heckler, I'll try to charm them or try to like include them in a joke, like somehow like involve them. And then they usually quiet down. But these women, they were set on making a scene. And so they're walking out of the room, and before they leave the room, they turn around, they go, F you, transphobe. And I was like, oh, it makes sense. Like, why they didn't leave right away. They wanted to finish their tater tots, because these women were well over 200 pounds each. And I was like, well, I hope they tipped the wait staff. And so sure enough, they barge out of here. I was like, I was making jokes. Like, I hope they don't get harpooned in the parking lot. I hope people, you know, I hope they're going to get taken for their tusks. Like, I'm just making all these fat jokes and having a great time. And when the show's over, I get outside and the security guy said to me, like, they pushed all your merch off the table. I tried to put it back, but I was like, because everything was kind of messed up. I was like, wow, they were just mad that I didn't carry 3X, you know? they just obviously were still pissed. And they went to talk to the manager. They went to put in a formal complaint. So luckily I got that all on tape and posted it. So it got to be like a little bit of a viral moment. But sometimes these moments happen and you're not filming. So I'm just happy that I'm, you know, maybe I do need someone like your wife around, because, you know, I've never been attacked or anything like that. But that is a worry more so in my mind. And especially while I was pregnant, I was like, oh, what if like I get physically attacked? I can't run away as quick. I'm like 180 pounds now. I mean, now I lost some of it, but when I was pregnant, I was freaking huge. And I couldn't sneak through the doorways. I was knocking stuff over. So, yeah, definitely things change when you get pregnant. But and maybe you shouldn't be 8 months pregnant telling jokes on stage. Maybe you should just be in a bed with your feet up.
Well, I mean, I want to ask you about those kind of risks, you know, in comedy these days, maybe especially these days, that people are kind of nuts, right? And you have to worry about that. I'm not sure how long you've been in the business doing this. And I'm wondering if you're seeing a change in that sense, where it's becoming, let's just say, more risky. I mean, not necessarily physically dangerous, but more risky to do what you're doing.
I've been doing comedy since about like 2010, 2011. So God, for a while. I don't look it though. That's for sure. You know, I think what's happened more so, I've noticed over the last 10 years is like, it was a bit bad. Like, the 90s was really the golden age for comedy, wasn't it? And you could have your whole career just, if you have a great quick set, you go to late night, and then you get sitcom and your whole career path is laid out for you. But social media has really changed the game, ultimately in a good way, because anybody can really kind of go viral and have a comedy career, not necessarily live in the big cities, like not live in New York or LA, which has been a positive thing. But what I think what's like mainly happened to people over the last 10 years is they've stopped focusing on their own lives and families. And like, if you look at, you know, our birth rate, it's people just aren't women are not having babies enough. There was some statistic about how like Gen Z women, something like 24%, like a really low percentage, supported Trump. And the theme from the poll was like that young Gen Z women are like the most liberal, the most mentally ill of any of the generations. And I think that really points to kind of just like a social contagion. And that is, I mainly focus on women because like that's who I kind of understand. You're like, I'm a woman. I know how their mind works. But there's less of a focus on like meeting a guy, starting a family, and really like that's your focus. Now it seems like the focus is like, what is your activism? What are your causes? Because I think when women don't get married and have kids, you still have those maternal instincts, except where, you know, you have to point them somewhere. So for some people, that's owning multiple cats. For other people, that's like, oh, let me take up for some victim group. Let me take up for right. Some kind of cause that I throw my life into, and, you know, go to as many protests. I need to throw soup at a painting. I need to like spray. I need to like, you know, try to mess up a Tesla. I have to spray paint a Tesla dealership. It's like that. People think they're truly doing good in the world. And I think it's a result of people just not having kids, like not having focusing on their own families.
Or, you know, focusing on something other than getting the clicks. Right. And mm-hmm. I think you're right on that. I'd also argue, though, in terms of the declining fertility rate, which is a big deal, that young men aren't particularly being formed well in that regard either. So I think even if you're a young woman who is oriented properly to looking to start a family, there's, you know, there was a tour guide. I was in Alaska, and there was a tour guide that was talking about the fact that the ratio of, you know, that women should think about coming to Alaska because the ratio of men to women is something like 12 to 1.
Or wow. But they're all fish. They all smell like fish, probably.
Right. And what the tour guide said is that the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
That's great.
and I think that that's true kind of for the young generation coming through, is I don't think either sex is being particularly well formed to mental stability and a focus on, you know, enriching their lives through, you know, through growing families or even just rational, non-political sort of formation. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm immersed in politics, you're immersed in culture. And I think that people just immerse themselves into kind of narcissism. And you talked about the hecklers at this particular show, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about hecklers in general, but I think hecklers are basically narcissists.
Totally right. Mm-hmm.
And they want to be part. They want to be the act.
You're completely right. And if there's something that happens, sometimes if they're drunk or not, sometimes it's a girl, it's her bachelorette party or something, and she's used to being the center of attention, and she can't sit for an hour and a half while other people are the focus. So it's just like, oh, they have to say something, they have to be in the show. Then there's some people who think, I'm helping, I'm making it funnier, I have a funny joke too. And sometimes I'll even like call somebody up on stage and like, not that I want to humiliate them, but it's just sometimes you have fun with them. You're like, all right, you want to be part of the show, here you go. But it definitely is narcissism, Ed. I think it's just they're unable to kind of put themselves in the back seat for a few hours, and it's like what compelled these women to like yell out in the middle of the show. It's like, No. Her feelings on the matter on Dylan Mulvaney were so important. It was so important to her to correct this random other audience member because she knew what was right about Dylan Mulvaney. She couldn't let it stand that somebody was calling Dylan Mulvaney a man, because she knew that she was right and it was worth interrupting my act, everybody's good time. Like, she needed to put herself and what she had to say above everything that was going on. And it really is narcissism. And, you know, social media has completely egged it on. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'm on social media. You know, it's part of my job. I got to be on social media. It's part of your job. You're on YouTube. You're on Facebook. You're on Instagram. We're going to have all those links in the post, by the way, and on Twitter. And if you're Twitter is the easiest one to read off. It's just Chrissy Mayer. It's just your name at Chrissy Mayer. And, you know, Instagram, Chrissy Mayer Pod, Facebook, The Chrissy Mayer. And we'll get to more of that in a bit. So it's not as though you're not engaging on that. You're using it for promotion. And that's, I think, particularly rational, right? But I think that people get so wrapped up in themselves these days because of social media, because of that formation of social media. And you see this. I mean, watching it. This is sort of, you know, confess your, this is the confessional moment here, is that I've gotten addicted on YouTube to these stupid arrest videos, right? and true crime stuff, right? And I'm watching this segment about this woman who keeps going to Target and Walmart to shoplift while filming herself shoplifting, keeps getting arrested for it, keeps getting prosecuted for it because she's providing the evidence for it. And I'm thinking,
what a strange activity. What a strange hobby. Like, I must steal, but I have to film it as well. Because maybe there's something like a high she gets out of, like, when she gets away with it. She's like, ooh, I have the footage.
And she's doing it to build a brand. She's doing a...
Wow.
And this is the best part, Chrissy. She's building a elegance brand, or, you know, elevated brand, right? Sort of a not rich is not the right word, but you know what I'm talking about.
Luxury, like a luxury brand.
Luxury brand. And she's stealing from Walmart and Target to get this.
No way. That's great.
I mean, that's just comedy, right? It's an intentional comedy, but it's comedy.
Well, she has the luxury of not paying for these items because she's good at shoplifting.
So on hecklers, you know, and you say some are just drunk and some are just narcissists. They want to get involved. I almost want to ask you, what was your best heckler experience and what was your worst heckler experience?
Okay. Best heckler experience, I have to say, was the Dylan Mulvaney moment because it was caught. I was on my phone and I was able to... get a lot of attention off of that. It was really funny. Fun for me. Nobody got hurt. They paid for their meal. So it worked out for everybody. And I guess the worst, I was doing stand up in Atlantic City, New Jersey at a beer, like it was like a beer festival or something like that. We were in like a big, like, not like kind of like a Javits Center, like a convention hall. And me and a couple of my friends were stationed at the porta potties. Our job was to do comedy at the porta potties. And there was a big banner over our heads called Shitty Jokes. And it was just absolute worst scenario for doing jokes. Like, people are, there's no reason for them to listen. They kind of don't want to be stared at while they're in line for the porta. But there were like 20 porta potties all lined up. And then the stage. And it was just so much fun. Like, I ended up just, and we each had to do like an hour. It was just way too much time for the circumstances. And there was like maybe four of us. So we were like, okay, I'll do an hour. Then we'll kind of swap out. And you're just up there talking to people. And at one point I'm making declarations like, all right, just so you guys know, if you have AIDS, you're going to want to use these porta potties on the left here. And if you're clean, no STDs, you want to go on this side. Then people look up who are on that side. Like, what? You just start saying random things to get people's attention. And my friend Amory, she was a Vikings fan and she's just talking about sports. And, you know, she was the wrong fan of the wrong team, I guess. And somebody threw an entire Subway sandwich at her. Like, we're not talking just a tidy, you know, like turkey, cheese. This was like meatball sauce. It was very messy. It got everywhere. And that's why I'm always worried, like, okay, what kind of food are they going to throw at us?
Have you ever had that happen to you? Have people?
No, I've never had a food. I have like a bottle thrown like in my general direction, but not like at me. It just kind of like hit the wall near me. But that was it. So I've been pretty lucky so far.
That's pretty scary stuff, actually. I mean, and again, I mean, you're up on stage. You're exposed. You're at risk, and yet you still do risky material, right? You still do provocative material. You work with other comedians. I'm sure you're on tour. You got a tour going on, I think, at the moment, right? You're going to be...
Actually, this month, May 17th, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Mount Kisco at a venue called Jazz on Main with my buddy Keanu Thompson. That's going to be, Saturday, May 17th at 9 o'clock. And then I got some more dates coming up. Long Island in August, Plano, Texas, Phoenix, San Diego, Ohio, more dates coming up. So if you guys just go to my website, chrissymayer.com, you can get tickets.
Got to swing through Waco.
Ooh, yes. I've never been.
Yeah, well, they got the silos. And that's pretty much it. But you got to at least see the silos, right? The whole Chip and Joanna thing. It's
Do they have Buc-ee's in Waco?
They have a Buc-ee's now. They have a Buc-ee's about half an hour outside, half an hour north and a half an hour south. But yeah, wow. You should actually do a show at Buc-ee's. I mean, you wouldn't believe the crowd that
I would love. I would live at Buc-ee's if I could. It really is the most magical place. You can get There's no way I leave a Buc-ee's without spending $100 on crap I don't need. But it's so exciting. Like, they make their own jerky. They make their own fudge. The best brisket I've ever had in my life was at a Buc-ee's. I ate it with my hands in the car like a raccoon. It just was so good.
Yeah. Buc-ee's is amazing. Buc-ee's is absolutely amazing.
It's life changing.
You know, if you travel around on a road, at least, you know, the fact that they have clean restrooms is sort of life changing.
The restrooms are cleaner than my whole house. I want to lay down on the floor and go to sleep.
Well, you've got a 1-year-old, of course. Okay, that's normal for having your house with a 1-year-old. So.
Just, I need some mommy time. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, you're doing these things. You're taking risks. Are you seeing other comedians holding back? When you know, no, we're not here to name names or anything like that. But just your overall impression.
Let's name names.
Name names. I wasn't going to press you for that, though.
Yes and no. I think the comics that never cared to begin with, and we would consider, like, you know, more. I don't know. I don't know if you want to call them canceled, because you're never really. You're only canceled if you want to be. There's always independent shows you can do. You can always do your own. There's many ways to get your voice out there. So, I would say, you know, people like, Anthony Cumia is an old. He was a radio legend, and he went from on Sirius XM to Fired to then starting his own network, Compound Media, where I kind of came up and kind of learned about podcasting from. That's why I named him. But now he's back on AM radio, so he kind of uncanceled himself. But strictly, like, stand-up comedy-wise, Tyler Fisher, Leonardo Joni. There are a lot of comics that have always kind of pushed the boundaries, and they don't care. They never apologize for jokes, you know, myself included. And then it depends. Like, if you're a more mainstream comic and you're used to that mainstream money, maybe you're a little bit more Hollywood, then yeah, you are gonna be way more afraid of cancellation. There was an article that came out a couple months ago in March where Nikki Glaser said she was afraid to do Nikki Glaser, who is, like, one of the most successful female comics out there today. She was hosting like some awards show. Like, she's absolutely crushing it. She's done all the mainstream, you know, roasts. But she said she's afraid of doing political material. And I've heard this sentiment too from, like, Kathy Griffin. Oh, if I do political, oh, Trump's going to deport me. Trump doesn't care about stand-up comedians. Like, it's not even, he's not even really looking to deport, like, regular illegals. I think it's mostly just criminals he's focusing on. But this sentiment I've heard from some mainstream comics, like, I'm going to be deported if I do political material, if I make fun of Trump. It's so insane to me. And I think it's just a product of kind of, like, legacy media brainwashing, or they're maybe just really afraid of losing their money. And they're like Bill Burr is another really good example of how he was edgy. He was so hilarious. And now he's kind of gone the way of Howard Stern, where his elite connections are more important than kind of saying, you know, true things. He's a lot more, I think, creatively stifled than he was years ago, and just more concerned with making the right friends than saying what needs to be said, you know, speaking for the people.
Yeah, you know, Christian Toto's written about that too, and I know
I love Christian. Yeah,
I do a podcast every week on culture. We'll be talking about this too on our next episode for sure. But he and I have talked about that. He and I have talked about sort of how I guess sort of like the elite stratosphere of comedy, especially late night television comedy, has really become regime comedy, and really is just stultified, right? And, you know, I'm old. Okay, I'm just going to say.
Stop, you don't look it.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. But I mean, I remember when Johnny Carson was on TV, and he would do quasi-political humor, but it was mostly just making fun of both sides a little bit, you know, just on you know, surface stuff, nothing really deep or you know, activist type of humor. And Jay Leno was the same. But then it kind of transitioned into this sort of weird regime comedy where you have Stephen Colbert having, you know, dancing syringes across the stage to promote you know, vaccines, and that's somehow comedy. And so to kind of sum it up, they're basically not really even going after laughs anymore. They're going after claps. We call it clapter. I'm sure you're familiar with the term. But, do you see that more out on the road? Or do you see people really just trying to be on the edge and trying to really get people to laugh and think?
Yeah, I think and regime comedy is such a great way of describing it. And I remember when the whole thing came out with the dancing syringes, you're like, oh, wait, like how much big pharma money are these shows getting? It's something I never thought about before. And you're like, oh, you know, when you think about comedy shows sucking, you're like, oh, well, SNL started to suck. They lost a lot of, you know, their good actors. And then, you hear about that their hiring pool is pretty narrow, and that they only really hire a certain type of Ivy League person, or they're very specifically just from maybe like UCB theater. It's not like they're not cast from like a wide net, you know, it's very kind of, I don't know if nepotism is the right word, but it's just, you're like, okay, well, they just don't have good writers. But then when you look at the late night shows, they're also sort of creatively stifled, because it's like they can't really, I mean, they had 4 years to really make fun of the Biden administration. It's Weekend at Biden. There were so many jokes there to make fun of Biden. Everyone knew that he was not the real president. Everyone knew, like, this is just a sham, but they were too afraid to go near it. And when you go on the road, actual people aren't like that. We still laugh at stuff that's inappropriate. That's racial. That's sexist. That's, you know, all the things you're not supposed. You don't have control over the things you laugh at. That's what's so great about live comedy, is just eliciting that reaction from people. So I think if you go across the country, you realize, okay, people are still laughing at the same things. It's just when you turn on the TV, it seems like our culture is kind of in these woke shackles in terms of comedy. But
Think then that overall in your experience, not just on what you're seeing on television, but when you're talking to, you know, when you're doing your sets with audiences, are you seeing reactions from them that is making it look like there's less and less things that you can talk about, that there's more and more things that provoke negative reactions? Or do you think that, you know, it's really just that people are, you know, the media or activists are just trying to make it that way?
And it's, yes, really, I think that media and activists are trying to make it seem that way. I had a show recently, I think it was the Indiana show, where I had a table full of women and they yelled out, like, we're TERFs, we're proud TERFs. I was like, yes, thank you for God. This is great. They gave me a pin that said, like, keep men out of women's sports or something. Like, these were great. I was like, oh, it's always good when you meet audience members who, you know, are like-minded, and you can just, everyone kind of exhales sometimes. And even in that moment with the heckler, the whole room kind of goes, okay, most of us are sane. It's only like these four people that are crazy, and we can kind of poke fun at them. Because, you know, you watch TV, radio, you look at your phone for long enough, you go, okay, am I the crazy one? Am I in the minority? Do most people really think this way? Are most people using pronouns? And then you put down your phone for a while, you get out and talk to people, and you realize, oh no, it's the other way around. They are very much the minority, but they're the loudest, and they're very influential over media and news and all that. So that's what we see a lot of. So it's good to remember that, yeah, most sane people are not down with all this crap and just want to have a good time.
You know, and I think maybe we're starting to see a little bit more of that, culturally speaking. I don't want to necessarily get too much into the politics of this, but I think culturally speaking, people are starting to push back on this idea that I'm going to adjust my pronouns for you, or, you know, or that I'm going to buy into your whatever fantasy life that you have, sort of thing. This is specific to your comment about the proud TERFs out in the audience. For people who don't know what that means, it's trans exclusionary radical feminists is what TERFs stand for. So in case anybody who's watching this doesn't know the reference, J.K. Rowling, right, has been called a TERF. I don't think it's, I'm actually kind of amused, and I appreciate a little bit the fact that they actually adopted the term, because it was originally tossed out as an insult. Trans exclusion, radical feminists. Okay.
Like, I thought it was something that had to do with golf. Yeah, it took me a while to figure out what it meant too. Yeah, it's great that people are not we're at this point in 2025, we're being called a racist or a homophobe or a transphobe has absolutely no effect. These insults have been used far too often over nothing, and they've lost all meaning. So, and I think you've seen a lot of the corporations, you know, kind of take, and I don't know if it's because of Trump being in office or just the tides changing, but I think the corporate pronoun trend is over for the most part.
Yeah, I think so, you're right. I think you're right about that. And I think it's a couple of different things, but I think the fact that Trump actually won the election has woken some people up to the fact that it's simply not selling among what is actually the dominant culture, not what is being portrayed as the dominant culture. And also, I think that, you know, there's been some Supreme Court decisions that make it very complicated for corporations now to do those types of things. And I think I honestly think it probably the election did that. I think it just introduced corporate America to a whole different look at America that they had been looking at, because they've been looking at it through the prism of the media and the media's, you know, cultural control. And suddenly it's one of those emperor's has no clothes things, which go back and talk about Joe Biden about. Anyway, I think you're right about that. And I think, you know, you're in the comedy trenches, right? And that's the reason why I was really curious to ask you about that, is that maybe do you play colleges? I know that Chris Rock said that he was not going to play colleges and universities anymore because he wouldn't be able to do his set.
Yeah, that's really understandable. I've done one college. I think I did Rutgers in New Jersey when I was very new, like 3 years or less into comedy. And even at this point, I don't think I would enjoy doing a college because they're really still kids in my mind. And I think I want to make it a rule, like, unless you pay taxes, I'm not interested in trying to make you laugh because you're not really like part of the adult world yet. So I don't think anybody should be performing at colleges. It's just like, all right, kids, focus on your studies. What would you say to even make them laugh? I guess if I had to, I would talk about maybe I would focus on dating. But then again, I would just be like, look, kids, I met on a really old app. You probably haven't heard of it. It's called In Person. I don't know if I could even connect with them because I feel so old and so like, so far away from college at this point. They really are just still kids. It's like another 4 years of a senior year. I don't think any comics should be doing colleges. We should just.
I can't even imagine dating in this in this environment. It just it just sends a shudder through my entire body thinking about that. I'm glad I've been married for 31 years because I don't have to deal with that.
But it's interesting because politics are probably way more important in dating than it used to be like 10, 20, 30 years ago. And maybe in a sense it is better that you get that out of the way early on, because it's just going to be something that will ultimately break you up later. Like we see articles in magazines like, you know, Cosmo or Glamour, like why you should break up with your Trump supporting boyfriend or husband. And like, how insane is that? We never saw anything like that in any other administration, but it just goes to show you how powerful the media is and how many forces were and are still against President Trump.
I don't have a problem with people being opposed to President Trump. What I think is the problem, though, and this is where comedy comes in, is that it becomes your entire life. Man, my life is a lot more than just politics. That's my job, right? And, you know, sometimes people want to engage me in political talk, and every once in a while I'll just say, hey, look, I'm off the clock, man. I clocked out at 5. Let's talk about your kids. Let's talk about your grandkids. Let's talk about your hobbies or mine or practically anything else other than politics, because everything is politicized right now. And probably, you know, comedy can be political too. And sometimes political comedy can be really funny. You know, I remember Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg, Billy Crystal doing stand-up, and all three of those have very different political positions than I do, but they were funny.
Yeah.
And they were also somewhat unpredictable, because you were never really sure exactly what they were going to, come after, you know, what they were going to skewer, but they would often skewer a wide range of things. It's just not the case anymore. Everybody's so political. I'm amazed that you were able to get through a set without a heckler, frankly.
Yeah. Well, at this point, I've been doing it long enough. I think the people I get at my shows mostly know what they're coming to see. And that's why it's, but I always do have to record in case I do get some random people who don't know what they're in for and want to take up for a famous transgender, and we can have a fun back and forth. Yeah, I think that's maybe the only downside of being a little bit more better known and having your fans kind of like know what kind of comedy you do. It's like you don't, I guess that would be more so if I was doing sets like in New York City, you get kind of like a random group of people. And so maybe that's a good place to, you know, make sure you always come back to try out the new material so that you get the fresh, you know, you get like a fresh reaction to it. Cause if you're always playing to people who like know you and love you, then you know, you're not going to get like that as much of a shock from people.
And I don't think it'd be as much fun for you, right? I mean, I'm assuming that one of the reasons why you got into this and one of the reasons why it works for you and you enjoy it so much is that you have that sort of live interaction where you're going into the unknown. There's, I guess, I'm sure an adrenaline rush from that, you know, risk-taking factor. And I'm sure that you would love to have that edge of not knowing exactly how things were going to go and how, you know, what the reaction was going to be so that you can maneuver live. I mean, is that a big part of what drives you to do live comedy?
I think so. I think I know I got into it because I was raised in a house where we couldn't really be honest with one another. And that's what drew me to stand up. I was like, oh, the stakes are really low. This is a room full of strangers. I'll never see them again. I can just be honest and talk about stuff. And yeah, as I've gotten older, it is more about like seeing how I can push people's buttons. Like what, you know, what are people sensitive about? But what, you know, what are getting laughs? Like what are all things that we can agree are true? And that's really what a laugh is just an acknowledgement of something true, I think.
Right. Right. So you also do something that's very, very different. You do this. You have the Chrissy Mayer podcast. And I mean, it's still, I mean, we're having a great conversation. I told you at the beginning, I don't think we're going to go an hour. And now I'm having,
look at us.
I'm having so much fun in this conversation. And it's such a great conversation. So it's got the same sort of flexibility. It's got the same sort of spontaneity, but it is a little bit different because you don't have the audience there. You have, it's a one-on-one or sometimes two-on-one. I do radio sometimes and it's one-on-one or two-on-one, or sometimes it's just me by myself, which I actually enjoy the least. I'm not big on monologues. I actually just more like engaging with people.
Me too. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, is this really what I sound like? You know, like it's always good to have another person to bounce off of. But I started the podcast, and why I love podcasting is because I wanted, I started it in January of 2020. And then like the pandemic hit and I was like, all right, let me try to do a couple more days a week. Because typically what most comedians do is they would do one podcast once a week and they just interview other stand-up comics, which becomes very kind of like insular and doesn't appeal to
sure.
the broader population. But when I started my podcast, I wanted to talk to people who were canceled or misunderstood by the internet or just, you know, have some kind of stigma around them. You know, I think it was interesting, like to hear it from the person themselves instead of, you know, Google search history. So then I kind of became fascinated with talking with like other comedians, journalists, sometimes like political talking heads, sometimes adult film stars. It really kind of like ran the gamut of all types of folks. So, and it's something I enjoy too. Like I love talking to people. I love kind of like dissecting themes and, you know, analyzing what's going on in culture. So it's good. It's a nice compliment to stand up, which is really just like, it's a one way conversation.
Right.
So
most of the time,
right. If you're lucky.
So you enjoy the, obviously you enjoy it because you're doing quite a bit of it now. And by the way, you can find that at chrissymayer.com/podcast. And you can get all the episodes that, that she's done. Obviously you're doing this, you know, working it into whatever touring that you're doing. So it complements it, right? It's not going to replace what you do on stage, and what you do on stage isn't going to replace this. And, you know, maybe is it a grounding experience or just something fun that you've enjoyed and you're going to continue to do it as long as you enjoy it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I do enjoy it. And then I got fired from my day job in December of 2021 because I wouldn't take the jab. It was a job in corporate media. I guess I won't say exactly what I did, but working in entertainment, you know, kind of if you think about like the world of awards shows, it's kind of like in that vein. And I worked there for 6 years and we were remote for a couple years. And then suddenly everyone's got to go back in the building. And I knew that I was going to try to get pregnant. So I was like, nope, this hasn't been tested. I'm not going to do it. And then I got fired. And then all I wanted was the podcasting to kind of like take the place of my day job income, you know, which it right. has. So in that sense, like all my dreams came true. But I do love the conversations I have with people and who I've been able to meet, you know, over the years at different conventions. I went to like the Turning Point USA convention 1 year. So it's been really cool to have that network of friends and acquaintances and people I work with. It's been a really nice compliment.
What do you do you have any particular areas that you like to discuss on the podcast, or is it pretty much wide open?
It's mostly it's a lot of interviews. I've had like very well-known names like Ann Coulter, Roger Stone, Sebastian Gorka. And then I've had, you know, just other comedians I'll interview like my other friends who do YouTube. So really like all levels there. And usually I like to just, I'll see what they're talking about, what they've been passionate about lately, what they're tweeting about. So we'll sometimes get into that, or it'll just be like reactions to viral videos and we'll keep it light, kind of like that. Every Sunday I have a panel show called Simpcast, and it's me and a bunch of other women, and we're talking about, you know, like news, culture, sometimes just reacting to viral videos. So I try to keep a good mix between like serious topics. Sometimes I'll interview authors about their, you know, latest book that they've written, or just again reacting to culture.
I'm going to wrap up here in just a minute, but I do want to ask you about, to be a little bit more serious, to take it a little bit more in a more serious vein. You know, there's a lot of, I think, threats to free speech. We certainly saw it over the last few years in terms of censorship on tech platforms, including YouTube, including Google, including Facebook. And for a while on Twitter, Elon Musk bought Twitter and he exposed all of it. And now it seems as though they're dismantling it, and that's a good thing. But do you trust that that is going to continue to happen? And do you think comedy has anything to do with trying to ensure that censorship is pushed off to whatever extent is possible?
Yeah, I was happy to see Elon take over and the changes that were made to Twitter, now X, even though I can't bring myself to call it X. I don't know why. It's just always good.
Twitter. It's Twitter.
It's Twitter. It's been Twitter since 2007, people. You can't just change, you know? So I would like to think that these changes are going to be permanent. But again, the COVID years are just really sealed into my brain forever, and I'm never going to be able to forget about how that felt. So I think we always need to be vigilant that our free speech could be taken away at any point, and we have to keep it strong. And part of that is like comedians have a really important job to be kind of on the front lines of free speech in a sense. And it helps take temperature of where people are at. So like, okay, we can exhale a little bit, but always be vigilant, because I feel like we're only one administration away, I think, from things being back to how they were.
Absolutely. And I think I think comedy, and Christian and I talk about a lot about this, is comedy is really the canary in the coal mine. Because if you can't make fun of things, it means that you can't talk about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's really almost, I really is a canary in a coal mine. If you can't make a joke about something, it means you're not allowed to talk about it, or you're not allowed to talk about it in any other terms other than what the dictates of the current cultural establishment will allow you to do that. And that's not free speech. That's authoritarian. And that's what mm-hmm. we've been kind of going through for the last several years, even apart from the pandemic stuff. I mean, we've been talking about political correctness for, you know, quite, you know, since the 80s at least, but it's gotten a lot worse, I think, in the last 10 to 15 years. And so you kind of stepped up into the breach in comedy. You know, the timing of it is perfect to push back on this. And I mean, I really commend you for having the courage to go out there on stage and talk about things and make people unhappy by joking around about things that, you know, might skewer their own sacred cows.
Yeah, I'm really more making people more so unhappy online. I've noticed because, like, Twitter and Instagram, like that, you have less control over who sees it. Whereas at your live shows, it is mostly people who know me that are coming to those. But yeah, social media is a good way to take the temperature on certain things. But yeah, you're right. It's our job as comedians, or even just like, you don't even have to be a comedian. If you're a funny person or you're outspoken, like you also have a right to constantly be testing the bounds of where things are at and free speech. So yeah, I agree with you.
Well, thank you so much for what you do. And so now we've come to the part of the podcast where you tell us where you can find all things Chrissy Mayer. And talk a little bit more about your tour.
Thank you so much for having me, Ed. This was a delight. It flew by. My website is chrissymayer.com, ChrissyMayr. I have tickets for sale on there. And if I don't, that means I'm getting the tickets soon. I'm going to be kind of all over the rest of the summer into the fall, Texas, Ohio, maybe a Florida trip. I got a Westchester show coming up in a couple of weeks. I said Ohio, Long Island. And again, like if there is a comedy club near you that you want to see me at, tweet at them, tweet at me, call up your local club. You know, I don't really have management helping me book gigs. So it's really just me being like, hello, please have me. So, yes. And you can subscribe to my podcast on YouTube. And you can listen to it on all those other platforms too, like Spotify and SoundCloud. Follow me on Twitter at Chrissy Mayer and on Instagram at Chrissy Mayer Pod. But yeah, I'm really mostly active on Twitter and YouTube.
Well, Chrissy Mayer, it's been an absolute delight. I hope we get a chance to do this again.
Yes, please.
Work on your tour and get some sleep. I know with a one-year-old that's a real issue. So sleep, get some rest, be strong out there. And thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Ed.